Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Emily Walker, the Vice President of Advocacy at the VSCPA, and we're glad that you could join us, I guess, this morning going into afternoon on our Q&A with the Virginia Tax Department. We decided to hold this event because we've seen so many questions related to the Tax Conformity and Tax Reform Bill that passed in the 2019 General Assembly session, and thought it might be helpful to give you an opportunity to really dialogue with some of the folks from the Tax Department. So there are no slides for this event. So if you're looking for slides and they're not there, that's why. We also won't have any polling questions or anything like that. So we've sent some questions ahead of time to the Tax Department based on what you submitted to me. But if you have other questions, we ask that you put them in the chat box and I will read them, or someone from the department will read them, so that we can make sure that they get answered. And if there's anything that for some reason can't be answered, we will work with the department to get the answers and get those out to the group. We're also going to post a recording of this session on Connect, so that if you need to go back and re-listen to it, or others who couldn't participate today wanted access to the information, that will be available there as well. So with that, I'm going to turn things over to Kristen Collins at the Tax Department to introduce herself and the rest of her team that are participating today, and then we can jump into some of the questions.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kristen Collins. I'm the Policy Director at the Department of Taxation. I have with me today Matt Huntley, who's our lead analyst for the income tax team in my group, and James Savage, who's the senior analyst for that team. Matt and James have both been really involved tracking the federal legislation before the TCJA was even enacted, analyzing it. They've been heavily involved in the discussions over the past year and in the legislation during this past session. So I think to start, we've gotten a few questions in advance, but I think it would be helpful maybe if we give a brief overview of the legislation that passed during the 2019 session, the conformity piece, and then also the tax policy changes that were made in Virginia. So I think Matt's going to start giving a brief overview of that.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Matt Huntley. During the 2019 session, there were two identical bills that passed that advanced Virginia's data conformity. Those are House Bill 2529 and Senate Bill 1372. And those bills, advanced our data conformity to the Internal Revenue Code from February 9, 2018 to December 31, 2018. And that allowed Virginia to conform generally to all the provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018. If you recall, the 2018 General Assembly legislation didn't conform fully to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act or the Bipartisan Budget Act. That legislation deconformed to the provisions of that federal legislation that was effective for 2018 and after. We now, based on this 2019 legislation, now fully conform to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Bipartisan Budget Act, or almost fully conform. So in that, we conform to almost all the provisions to the extent that they flow through to the Virginia return unless an exception applies. So we've had several questions about various facets of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that whether we conform or not. And I just want to emphasize that unless an exception applies, and it flows through the Virginia return, we do fully conform to all the provisions. And we had some other questions that have been brought to our attention about whether we still require whatever election you made on your federal return regarding the standard or itemized deductions. You're still required to make that election on your Virginia return the same way. And that is the case. The original Tim Hugo legislation, House Bill 2529, would have allowed you to, whatever you elect on your federal, you could do differently on your Virginia return. But that was changed later in the legislative process. So the election you make on your federal return still must be the same as what you do on your Virginia return. Getting a little further into the actual conformity legislation, there were a few individual taxpayer changes that are effective for taxable year 2019 and after. Those include increasing the Virginia standard deduction for individuals from $3,000 to $4,500, and for married filing jointly from $6,000 to $9,000. And that change is effective for beginning with taxable year 2019 through taxable year 2025. In the current legislation, after that date, they'll revert back to the current $3,000, $6,000 regime. Also effective for taxable year 2019 and after for individual income taxpayers, the PEACE limitation is going to come back just for Virginia tax purposes. Also, the $10,000 federal limitation on the state and local income tax or tax deduction is going to be removed for taxable year 2019 and after. Also, taxpayers who file by before July 1st, 2018, will be entitled to a $110 refund for individuals or a $220 refund for married filing jointly taxpayers. And those refunds will be issued by between October 1st and October 15th, 2018. And I think we're going to get further into that later in this Q&A. But that's kind of a summary of the individual provisions and how conformity works with respect to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and other federal provisions. And I'd like to turn it over to James Savage to go over some of the business changes that are effective for 2018 and after.
Yeah, hello, James Savage, Virginia Department of Taxation. And essentially, there were two changes that were made for business purposes, and they are effective for 2018. So the first one was the legislation allows an individual and corporate income tax deduction for 20% of the amount of business interest that was disallowed as a deduction for federal income tax purposes. And essentially, the TCJA limited the amount of the deduction for business interest to 30% of your, essentially, it's a measure of income. And of the taxpayer's income. And so we've gotten a lot of some questions about this particular provision. And so we're actually going to be doing the budget requires us to do a work group starting on June 1st of 2019 to sort of look at this. And then we're also required to issue guidelines regarding the business interest limitation in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and also this 20% deduction. And that would be required by December 1st of 2019. And then the one other provision that's in there, so this is the first one, it's a deduction for 20% of the business interest. The other provision in this legislation generally affecting businesses is this legislation expands Virginia's existing corporate income tax subtraction. So it's currently allowed for subpart F income, and it's going to expand it to apply to global intangible low tax income. That's a loaded phrase. The global intangible low tax income, or GILTI, and that's also effective for taxable year 2018 and thereafter. And the reasoning behind this is that allowing a subtraction for GILTI, for global intangible low tax income, is essentially consistent with Virginia's longstanding policy of generally exempting corporations from taxation on their foreign income. It was essentially sort of a technical glitch of why this income wasn't caught by our pre-existing subtraction for corporations. So this was the General Assembly added this to clarify that. So those are essentially the two provisions affecting businesses that were made by this bill. This legislation that was recently passed. And I just want to mention, unlike a lot of the individual changes, they are effective for taxable year 2018. So at this point, can I hand it back over to you, Kristen, if that sounds good?
Sure. So kind of what we were thinking, we received several questions that were submitted in advance. So I thought maybe we could talk through those first. And then I see there are a number of questions that are coming in live, so we can address those after we go through the ones that were pre-submitted. And if you have questions or need clarification as we go, just please type it in the message box. Emily, feel free to interrupt me, and we can address anything that's relevant to what we're talking about. Sure. Most of the questions that came in before today were really focused on the refunds that will go out in October of 2019. So we'll go ahead and cover those questions first, and maybe we'll kind of just alternate through some of the questions. But the first question is, by what method will we be dispersing the additional 2018 refunds? Will it be check or direct deposit or another means? And right now, the plan is to issue checks. That could change, but I don't think that it will. That's kind of our current, currently what we're looking at. And I think that was really the intent of the legislature. And then also that's a little bit more administratively feasible than trying to update people's bank account information and whatnot. And I guess kind of related to that, or a general disclaimer, I guess, internally our agency is still looking at how to implement some of these changes, in particular the refund issue. And then, of course, anything that will affect the 2019 return, we haven't started updating those returns yet. So some of our answers may be a little bit uncertain or vague, but I can kind of tell you, or we can tell you, where we are in the process. The second question is, what should taxpayers do if they need to change their information, their address, or other information between the time they file their return and the time that the payments are dispersed? And they can do that on our website. We have a web page that's dedicated to that information, which I can provide to Emily, and she can send to you all. You can all your clients also have the option. They can call into our customer service line, and if they're able to verify their identity, they can update it that way, and they can either mail or fax in the information to our agency. So there's a number of options there, and those are standard currently how you would update your address.
Sure. Well, the third question we received, this is Matt Huntley again. If the filing status is married filing jointly, will one check be issued, one refund check for tax year 2018 be issued, or two? If one, is there a mechanism where taxpayers can request two, such as in cases of separation or divorce? That that'll still be handled under Virginia's current policy for handling that. That's under Virginia Code 58.1-499 Cap B. You must, in order to receive two checks, basically you must have a final divorce decree and submit that decree to the tax commissioner and all. And like I said, it would follow our current process for that. There would be no mechanism for getting two checks if it's just a separation, or if you don't have, if you're getting a divorce and you don't yet have a final divorce decree.
Oh, sure. So the next question we received was, what is the meaning of the term final return? So if you look at the legislation, it says for anybody who filed a final return by June, I believe it would, or by July 1st, before July 1st, 2019, they can be entitled to this, these October refunds of $110 for an individual or $220 for a married couple filing jointly. And so it ties it into final return. And some people have been asking, you know, what does that term exactly mean? It has, it has a meaning under federal law related to people who have, who are essentially deceased taxpayers. And that's not what this is related to. We've interpreted it, and our understanding is it's really supposed to be about just having a completely filed return that you're normally required to file. So filing a complete finalized return, if you will, by June 30th, 2019, or before then. So that's basically what we've just interpreted it to mean. Let me see here. So the next question that was asked is, are all taxpayers going to receive this additional refund subject to the timely filing requirement, or is it only those who are taking the standard deduction, or only those who are itemizing? And essentially, this refund that's going to be offered in October is not tied to doing the itemized or standard. You get it regardless, either way. All taxpayers who file by the deadline can be eligible for it, so long as they have sufficient tax liability.
All right, so the next question is, why is there a deadline for filing in order to get the extra refund? What if a taxpayer had to file on extension due to circumstances beyond their control? What if the taxpayer is out of the country? And so, unfortunately, the July 1st deadline is a statutory deadline the General Assembly decided upon. I think this was a big part of the discussions and the negotiations was having a refund and having this timeline. So that was what they decided upon. Administratively, we can't really do much about that since it is a statutory deadline. There are no exceptions under the law for that. So, and I don't, the money that will be generated from the individual provisions of the TCGA will go into this fund. And to the extent there's additional money in the fund, either from this taxable year or in future taxable years, the General Assembly has discretion to use that money for future tax relief. So one option for the General Assembly could be to provide similar refunds to taxpayers who did not file by July 1st. They could address that during the 2020 session. I don't know if they will, but that is an option. I think part of the intent was at some point you need a cutoff because we need a cutoff for looking at the money that comes in and how many taxpayers are entitled to it to make sure that, you know, we know what the refund amount is and who to issue it to. So I think that was part of the rationale for that as well.
So Kristen, I'm just going to interject here because there's, you know, a related question, which I think you basically have answered, but it was, you know, many clients who cannot file before July 1 due to late receipt of K-1s and what accommodations, if any, can be made for these taxpayers who will be missing out on the extra refund. So I think that your answer just covered that, but I wanted to acknowledge that we had gotten that question. There was also one about whether it was who was eligible for it regarding the type of deductions taken, and I think that question's been answered also.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Anybody can get it regardless of whether they're, you know, claiming the standard deduction or an itemizer. And there were some discussions during the session about limiting it only to standard deductors or only itemizers, depending on who you ask. But it is open to everybody regardless of what election they make. And unfortunately, even if there's something like a taxpayer waiting on a K-1 or other information beyond their control, unfortunately, legislation has the July 1st deadline, and so we don't really have any discretion to do anything differently. If that ends up being an issue for your clients, though, I mean, reaching out to the General Assembly and letting them know that's a concern could, you know, impact what they do in 2020 with any additional funds.
Right. And just so all of you know that are listening, as we answer the questions that have been submitted through the chat, I'm going to go ahead and delete them so that we know that they've been answered because they're kind of coming in different orders. So that's why they're going to be disappearing, just so you know. Okay, so to turn things back over to you guys.
Sure. And
there is another related question here. Is this 110-220 payment considered a refund of Virginia taxes previously paid? And so will it be included on a 2019 1099-G?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes. Yes, it is considered a refund and it would be counted on a 1099-G.
Okay. Let's see. What if the client had a balance due on the 2018 Virginia return? Will they get a 2019 1099-G anyway?
Do you mean if they owed when they filed their return, but then they're getting a refund in October? But if that's the case, yes. I mean, they would make their payment when they submit their return, and then when they get the refund, they would get a 1099-G for it.
Okay, and he says yes, that was what he meant.
Okay.
So also, is the 7/1/2019 deadline subject to the mailbox rule, meaning so if mailed by then qualifies, or does it need to arrive in Richmond by 7/1?
Yes, it would be subject to the mailbox rule, so it would follow the typical rule. So as long as it's mailed by then, it would be counted.
Just for clarification, it's before 7/1.
So right, it's yeah. Actually by 6:30. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to make sure. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. And will non-resident filers receive the refund?
Yes.
Okay. And then are taxpayers who have a state tax liability that is completely offset by the state tax credits entitled to the refund?
That's actually our next question on the list. So that was a good segue.
Okay.
No. So the law says that the individual shall only be allowed a refund up to the amount of the individual's tax liability after applying any deductions, subtractions, or credits. Mm-hmm. So if a taxpayer has a liability of more than $110 for a single individual, but they have a credit that offsets that liability, they would not be entitled to the refund. But they do get it regardless of whether they owe or get a refund when they file their return. So estimated payments, withholding payments, and that sort of thing are not taken into account when figuring, you know, the tax liability, but tax credits would be.
Okay. I think that's all
that's
the related questions. Go ahead.
That's another thing we don't have leeway with because it's specified in the legislation, just for clarification on that, the deduction, subtractions, and credits thing.
Right. Yeah, and the next question is kind of related to that as well. If a taxpayer has no taxable income and no tax liability and they file by July 1st, are they eligible for the refund? The answer is no. They have to have a tax liability. And if somebody has, say, they file a return and they have $50 of tax liability, they would be entitled to a $50 credit. So they don't get the full credit amount if they don't have that full amount of tax liability, but they would get a credit up to the amount of their liability. And that was a big part of the discussions during the session as well. I think there were some earlier versions that said you only get the credit if you have, you know, at least that much liability. There were some versions that were going to make it basically refundable, so you could get it in excess of your liability, and the agreement was you get a credit, but only up to the amount of your liability. And I think those are pretty much all the questions about the refunds. There's another question, why are the refunds not being refunded until October? Again, that's what the General Assembly and the legislation dictated, and I think they were too trying to, there's a couple different timelines in there. I mean, there's you have to file your returns before July 1st to qualify. The department, or I guess the governor, but we will be, you know, working on this, has to certify by September 1st the amount of money that will go into that fund to pay the refunds, and then the checks have to be issued between October 1st and October, I believe, 15th. Isn't it? So there needs to be time to allow for the estimating process, and there also needs to be time for, you know, Treasury to issue the checks. What were you...
There was one more that just popped up that the asking, you know, is the refund based on 2018 or 2019 tax liability? It's 18, correct?
Right. Yes. Yeah, and Matt has another point. You want to explain that as well?
Yeah, sure. This whole, just for full disclosure and stuff, based on the legislation, this refund amount is funded by the amount that goes into this taxpayer relief fund established by these two bills. And that's all that's based on the amount of money that the state brings in as a result of this conformity legislation. Because we're gonna realize a revenue increase as a result of all this, conforming to the TCJA in general and such. If the amount of money that goes into that fund is not enough to fully fund $110, $220 refunds to everyone who's eligible, those amounts will be prorated down for everyone proportionately. So let's say it's only half funded. Well, everyone's going to get a $55 or $110 refund instead of the full $110 or $220. That's just something to keep in mind just in case that comes to fruition. I mean, obviously, we have no idea at this point. We won't really know that until after June 30th going forward. So it's just something to keep in mind as a possibility. So.
Okay. If there aren't any other questions about the actual refunds, we can get into some of the other questions, which are more related to some of the other policy changes in the legislation. I don't think I see any others. There was a question, a more general question, whether the legislation sunsets in 2025. Generally, yes.
The standard deduction.
Right. The effective.
The increase of the standard deduction would sunset after 2025.
Yeah, the effective dates are based on each individual provision. So the standard deduction will sunset in 2025, or at the end of 2025, which is when the federal provisions are set to expire. The business provisions are permanent, and the SALT deduction is permanent, but it would only apply to the extent that's an issue at the federal level. If the $10,000 limitation goes away, that would no longer be necessary.
Same with the fees limitation
right,
as well.
Right. Okay, if there aren't any other questions about the refunds, one of y'all want to?
Oh, sure, I can jump in. Okay. So the next question we received is, will Virginia Tax be releasing supplementary information that tells taxpayers how to calculate the state income tax add back? If so, where shall we look for it on the website? So essentially, this is a good question. We've been looking at this issue internally, and actually this I believe this week, and I can see it, it's up there now, we have updated our form 760 and the other instructions, the form 760 PY, the form 763 instructions. We've updated them all to address this issue, which is basically whether, and some of the other questions ask about this too, whether you sort of need to prorate or something the amount of the line 11 state and local income taxes claimed on your Schedule A, whether you need to prorate that. And the answer is no. We essentially allow you to order your deductions in whichever way is most advantageous. And our instructions now address this point and basically allow you to order them in the way that's most beneficial. So in other words, if you had enough real estate tax liability, you could count that toward meeting your $10,000 and not have any add back, for example, and that could be beneficial to you. So we have now addressed that on our in our instructions just this week.
I'll go ahead. The next question is, as of today, this is from Mark. All right. Okay. Today, March 7th. I'm sorry. I'm all screwed up on dates. As of today, is TurboTax, specifically TurboTax Premier, up to date with the latest interpretation of conformity? And along with that, what about the other software companies? From the last we heard, TurboTax is up to date. As far as other software companies, it will be up to you guys to contact them to figure that out. We don't necessarily have insight into that unless we ask. So.
Yeah, and I did talk to our processing manager about this question. We have shared with the software companies updates on the individual side, updated schemas, updated instructions, so they have everything they need to update. Now, whether or not they already have, I guess, is another story. The bigger ones are probably a little bit quicker than some of the smaller vendors. I believe on the corporate side, most of them have not yet made the updates for GILTI and the business interest deduction, so they're still working on those, but that's probably not as pressing for most taxpayers, but that's my understanding of where they all currently are. And if you have specific questions about, it's always good to reach out to your software vendor just to make sure if anything looks like it's not accurate through your software vendor, either reach out to them or reach out to us, and we're happy to answer questions about how it should work.
All right, well, moving on, the next question, is Virginia allowing the Section 199 Cap A deduction that's allowed on the federal return as a deduction on the Virginia return? And would this deduction be listed as an other subtraction? The Section 199 Cap A deduction for qualified business income would not flow through to the Virginia return. That is a individual federal deduction, and it is a deduction from federal taxable income. And because the starting point for Virginia income tax liability is FAGI, it wouldn't come in there. Also, this is not the Section 199 Cap A deduction is not an itemized deduction for federal purposes. So it wouldn't sneak in as an itemized deduction on your Virginia return. Therefore, that does not flow through onto the individual return for Virginia income tax purposes. And related to that, there's no exception in the conformity or in any other legislation that would allow that deduction for Virginia purposes. In other words, it's just not allowed for Virginia purposes. So.
And I think that responds to one of the questions that came up today about what will be done about the qualified business deduction on the federal return, and the answer is it doesn't flow through to the Virginia return, like Matt just said. So I think that addresses that particular question.
And the last question we have here that we received in advance is, will personal exemption amounts increase in 2019, or is it only the standard deduction amount that's going to increase? And the answer is not based upon this legislation that passed. The personal exemption amounts are not changing. There was some discussion about it, but at the end of the day, the General Assembly decided, you know, not to increase the personal exemption amounts at this time. They just increased the standard deduction. But, you know, potentially maybe in the future General Assemblies might decide to increase it, but this legislation does not.
And a related question that just popped up a minute ago is whether you still get your personal exemption on the Virginia return when on the federal return you no longer do. You do still get it on the Virginia return. It's actually a really technical issue, and it's one, as we were tracking the TCGA, we paid close attention to, because it really mattered how they structured it. But they didn't repeal the federal personal exemption. They just set it at $0. And the way Virginia law is written, you get the number of personal exemptions you're entitled to under federal law. So even though you get zero on your federal return, you really get zero because it's a $0 personal exemption, not because you don't have personal exemptions, if that makes any sense. It's kind of a more technical and quirky issue. But we paid a lot of attention to that as we were going through this process, because it would have made a huge difference in Virginia how that was done.
Yeah. And related to that, that's something we're going to track going forward, because if they – ever do get actually strike that language out of the federal code, then ours would go away. So that's something we're going to keep watch on to the extent we can. But
so another question is whether Virginia is conforming for 2018 and not 2019 and going forward. No, it's last year the legislation was a little bit different than it usually is. It said it really conformed to the TCGA and the BBA only for 2017 taxable year, and then there were also a couple of exceptions in there. This time, the General Assembly did what they more typically do in a conformity bill, which is they just advanced the date of conformity, and it conforms to everything going forward, except for the specific provisions that they address, things like the peace limitation and the salt limitation.
Yeah, one thing I'll add to that is that the legislation did specify, though, that conformity is only effective for taxable years beginning on and after 2018. So it's going forward. So, and the reason why we needed to make that clarification is that, as you may remember, last year we deconformed from the changes that the federal government made to the medical expense a deduction, which required some taxpayers to report in addition. And this year we are, and going forward, we are fully conforming to the federal changes under the TCGA to the medical expense deduction. So in addition, will not be required. But we had to clarify that just to ensure that nobody thought that it was somehow retroactive and you could somehow go back to 2017 and undo the addition. So that's why this legislation specifies that it's for, that the conformity is for taxable years 2018 and after, but it's 2018 and then going forward. It's not just for 2018.
If I could just jump in here and add one other clarifying point, this really, it deals with the federal tax code as it exists as of December 31st, 2018. So if Congress acts in the interim, Virginia would need to do another conformity bill in order to pick up any additional changes. So I'm sure most people realize that, but I just wanted to make that clarification also.
Yeah, definitely. Good point.
So I apologize. I actually, my mic kind of dropped out there for a few minutes. So I do still see a few questions here that I know I haven't deleted, and I just want to make sure we're getting to all of them. So I'm going to kind of go back up to the top of the chat box and just run down these. The first one was, what is the Section 179 limitation for 2018?
So that's a federal limitation that they increased effective for 2018. The deduction amount went from 500,000 to 1 million, and then the phase out threshold increased from 2 million to 2.5 million. And I believe after 2018, it's indexed for inflation, both of those amounts. So Virginia, by advancing the data of conformity, we do conform to those changes. So those will be the amounts for Virginia purposes as well.
So to clarify, in 2019 and subsequent years, if the real estate personal property taxes alone exceed $10,000, the taxpayer can claim the full amount.
Correct. They can claim the full amount of the real and personal property taxes, the local taxes. After, you know, accounting for taking out the income tax piece, but yes.
Okay. For taxpayers who have non-Virginia tax exempt interest, what is an addition, or which is an addition on the Virginia return? Can taxpayers still reduce that interest by the amount of investment advisory fees paid related to that income?
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. I'd have to look into it. I don't know if this is something that changed under the federal law or if that's existing law. There was nothing specific in Virginia's legislation this year that addressed this. So, I mean, if the rule changed for federal purposes, we would conform to it, or if it didn't change, it would still
be
the old.
It might be related a little bit to the treatment of, like, miscellaneous itemized deductions. I know there were some things that were limited there, and maybe that's one of them, but I'm not sure if that would and how that would affect our addition.
That's one
I
have to look into.
Yeah.
Don't know off the top of our heads.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. So is that? Yeah, I was gonna say if that's something that you could look into and maybe get the answer to me, I can post that to the online tax community that we have, or follow up directly with the person who asked it.
Okay.
I know you did answer this one earlier, but perhaps this participant wasn't on the line at the time. It's, will the refund be sent as a check or an electronic payment? I think what I heard from you is that at this point you're planning for those to be check refunds.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a master list somewhere of the federal provisions that Virginia does not conform to for 2018?
The exceptions are set forth in the instructions. It's actually not a very long list. If we did not conform to the TCGA, it would have been a very, very long list. But we continue to deconform from the things that we've deconformed from in the past, things like bonus depreciation, certain NOLs for certain years, those sorts of things. Those haven't changed. Other than that, there's really nothing to add to the list other than the piece limitation, which will apply starting in 2019. That's not 2018, that's 2019. And then, of course, the not a direct deconformity, but the SALT deduction limitation that we will not include for Virginia purposes beginning in 2019. So it's a pretty short list, but the instructions do lay it out, what all those exceptions are to conformity.
Okay, so I think you've already answered this one, which is Virginia conforming to bonus depreciation? And the answer to that is no. And then somebody chimed in and said, just to confirm, the Section 179 limitation for 2018 tax year is $1 million.
That is the maximum deduction amount, yes.
Okay. So here's another one, which again, you may have answered, but just to be clear, the individual taxpayer still gets the personal exemption plus a further exemption for each dependent. This runs counter to the federal statute that disallows this. Currently, all we get on the federal side is the standard deduction.
Yeah, we did address that one a minute ago, and that was due to the way the federal law was drafted. They didn't actually repeal the provision. They just set it as $0. So you still get a personal exemption on the Virginia return.
Right. Okay. This one is, taxpayers have to be consistent with the standard deduction on their federal return versus Virginia for 2018. Does this treatment remain for 2019 and beyond?
Yes. Yes, they still must be consistent and going forward as well at this point. I know that was a like we said earlier, that was a question that some of the legislative proposals would have changed that, but that none of those got enacted. So
And some of the media reports made it confusing as to what actually ended up being passed as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. On pass-through returns, we currently complete the non-resident withholding on income before the deduction of separately stated deductions, such as 179. This year, we are being told to separate business interest expense as another deduction for 163J purposes, which is the 163J limitation at the individual level. Any administrative changes available so that we can deduct the other items for non-resident withholding?
We can look into that one. Yeah, that's not a question we've been asked before, but we can look into that.
Okay, so I'm going to leave that one in the chat as well so that we can retrieve that question if we need to, just to make sure we get all the follow-up. So that is the end of the list of questions currently in the chat box. Does anyone else have additional questions that you'd like to ask while we still have the tax department on the line? All right, I'm not seeing any additional questions. Thank you to everyone for taking the time to join us today. Thank you to Kristen, Matt, and James for your time as well in working through these questions. I guess I would say to our members, if you think of other questions that you need answers to, please feel free to send them to me and I will make sure that they get answered, pass them along to the folks in the department. We had just had a couple others pop in here, so let's go ahead and grab them while we can. For the business interest adjustment, is there any required disclosure on the pass-through entity for the potential add-back, i.e. for federal purposes, we must disclose excess business interest income, excess taxable income?
We'll have to look into that. We don't know at this point. We'll have to look into that a little bit. So.
Yeah, okay, we'll look so that's into another that. One we'll do some follow-up on.
Yeah, and that one is the business interest expense limitation and the 20% deduction that's allowed for Virginia purposes. That's all a little bit, the IRS issued several hundred pages of regulations shortly before the session. We weren't really sure whether Virginia was going to conform, and that's something we're kind of still looking at the details of those rules. Like James mentioned a little bit earlier, the legislation does require, or the budget, excuse me, does require us to have a working group this year to look at some issues related to the business interest deduction, and we'll be issuing guidelines on that. So some of that is a little bit still, even though it's effective on the 18 return, unfortunately, it's still being analyzed, and we're still working through some of that. So. But we do welcome feedback from you all if any of you are interested in those issues, if you want to participate in our work group or just get on the email list to see, where the discussions are headed. We're happy to include anybody who's interested.
Okay. We also had one more just to confirm Virginia will not conform to federal bonus depreciation. And I can answer correct. That one, which that's correct. The constant conversation between Kristen and I will also add that. So we'll see if we can do something about that in the future. But for now, it remains as it is. And there's a last question. Is there any way to sign up to be kept up to date on any last minute changes?
Probably the best thing in terms of getting information from our agency is to sign up for our email lists. If you go to our website, and I can find the link and send it to Emily so she can send it to you all to have, but that there's a place on our website where you can sign up for a number of different email lists. You can sign up to receive updates related to individual income tax, corporate income tax, and there's one specifically for tax practitioners. So I would recommend you all to sign up for that list. I know, for example, our group in policy development, we send out a number of tax bulletins every year. We've already done 4 this year, which is more than we usually have. But we do one for conformity, and we'll do them for other changes. We did one the other day related to an extension for payments by farmers and fishermen. We did one recently related to some federal changes related to military spouses, those sorts of things. So you would get those if you were on the tax practitioners list or the individual income tax list. So I would recommend signing up for that. And you also get other things from other parts of our agency as well. I think there's typically reminders about filing deadlines and that sort of thing as well, which doesn't come from our group, but our agency would send out. So that's probably the best way to stay up to date on changes. And of course, if you are interested in more, I guess, like administrative guidance, like rulings and whatnot, our laws, rules, and decisions page is the best place to check for new guidance from the tax commissioner, like rulings and appeal letters and whatnot.
Okay, great. Well, again, I'm seeing a lot of thank yous, so I'm glad that this was valuable for our members, and we appreciate everybody's time. Like I said, forward any additional questions that you think of as you go through this tax season to me, and I will be happy to pass them along to the department to get some answers. So thank you, everybody. I think that will wrap us up.
All right. Well, thank you all for your time. It was nice talking to everybody.
Yeah, thank you.